The All Souls Forum is a public forum from the All Souls Unitarian Universalist Church at 4501 Walnut Street in Kansas City, Missouri. It deals with significant issues, especially those that involve ethical values of the contemporary world and that promote critical thinking. While the All Souls Forum is on a summer hiatus, we will present programming of a similar nature. This week, we present part two of our two-part series from the Positive Mind Radio Show. Kevin O'Donohue, a licensed mental health counselor, and Nasima Diane Deemer, a licensed massage therapist and trauma specialist, talk about the importance of saying the word no in maintaining your mental and emotional health. The Positive Mind Radio Show is a production of the Foundation for Positive Psychology in New York City.
This is Kevin O'Donohue, licensed mental health counselor.
And this is Nasima Diane Deemer, trauma specialist and licensed massage therapist. And this is The Positive Mind,
where we bring you some ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And some positive words. What is your favorite word? Do you have a favorite word? I'm asking you, Nasima. It's a tough question. Like, everybody has to pause. What is my favorite word? Anti-disestablishmentarianism when I was a kid. But and how about now? Do you have a favorite word? I know I used to watch this show, The Actor's Studio, and at the end of the show, the host would ask a series of questions. And one of the questions was, what is your favorite word? What's your favorite word?
So, I'm sure people came prepared for that question.
I think as the show evolved, everybody knew that question was coming, but it was many, you know, some people didn't. I remember Christopher Walken said, come in. It was two words, that's two words, but I don't know. Today, my favorite word is salubrious.
It has a
nice mellifluous flowing sound to it. Salubrious. Do you have a favorite word?
I think velvet.
Oh, that's interesting.
I like velvet in general, but velvet, the word, I think is a, like, black velvet.
Why do we, yes, I like that. Yes, velvet. Velour. Why do we ask this question? Well, because we're going to talk about two important words today that's following up our show from last week. And we got a really good feedback from our show last week. It was really basically our Independence Day show. Our July 4th Freedom, we called it our Freedom Show. And we do this show every year, and it was really, we got really good feedback about the show and trying to help people separate out their real self from their false self. Do you feel like you are carrying around a false self most of the time? It turns out most of us are, you know, kind of performing to expectations and being what other people need us to be or what our upbringing and our childhood told us we had to be, and really not accessing who am I really in all of this. And so we do that show every year, and last year, this year, we got a lot of good feedback from it.
Yeah, and it's also like, who am I and what do I need is another question. You know, like, what are my needs? What do I want? We often
Indeed.
Ask this question.
Which brings us to this important word today of saying no. Right?
Nope.
We thought we'd do a show today on the importance of boundaries. The importance of boundaries. And you cannot have a boundary if you do not say the word no.
Yeah.
No. You know, they're good. What's the age when little kids say no all the time?
Two, three, four. And they call it terrible because no is so inconvenient, you know, to a parent. When a child is saying no, it's very inconvenient.
Yes.
and we want things to be convenient and easy.
And isn't it so interesting, as we talked about in last week's show, that we can build our whole life around not upsetting our parents. So it's the terrible twos. That's the last chance you get to say no. It's almost like at 3 or 4 or 5, you're riding the yes wheel. Okay, I have to say yes. I have to say yes. Oh. So last week's show, we talked about the 5 things you can ask yourself. How do I get to the real me? What am I? So one of the questions was, what am I doing every day that is not me? Right? So
it's like, what am I saying yes to that isn't me?
That I really want to say no to.
Right.
And right, when do you in a partner relationship stop saying, you know, I don't want to do this to your partner? Mm-hmm. And you just go along. When does that change happen? There's so many married men who are just going along, right? And the wives think that the men are closed off, like, you know, he just wants to, you know, not do things together or not go out or certain things. So they both have different points of view. But it'd be interesting for these partners that, when did I stop saying no? And when did I start going along all the time? I almost don't even know who I am. This is the great value of being in a relationship and being able to learn from being in a relationship. Learn about yourself and your partner learning about her or himself. When did I stop doing X? So right. Today we're focusing on no. When did I stop having the right to say no? You know, it's such an important word in psychology. Mm-hmm. We say the word boundary is so important. You know, you violated my boundaries, right? This is the parlance in today's world, right? And good. It's a good parlance, right?
Right.
That people are now starting to understand the value of boundaries. Me Too movement. It's all about boundaries. So this is a great evolution that we're going through. But it all gets down to, no, I don't want to do that. No. No.
And remarkably so, I think the terrible twos do lay the groundwork for your capacity and ability to naturally have the skill to say no. And I'm, you know, just as we're saying it, I'm really taking issue with the fact that we call it the terrible twos, because they really should be the glorious twos. Like when yes. your little one is separating from you and figuring out who they are, what they like, what they don't like.
That's right.
And they should, let's stop. That's my movement. That's let's right. not call it the terrible twos. It's the glorious twos. It's you growing up.
Right. That's a good idea. I like that. And here's the danger, right? When a parent says, oh, I have the ideal child, you know, my child is just wonderful, you know, they doesn't cause me any trouble. That's a problem. That is a problem, yeah. You know, as opposed to my kid is just always doing things opposite that I want them to do. That's a good thing, right? They're exploring. They're trying to become, of course, in balance. We know we don't want to. Yeah. Alienate our parents out there with kids who are going through this. But, you know, maybe it is a good thing to look at your child who is rebellious and is saying no. Is this is a good thing? Maybe this is really a good thing. It's not good for my child to accept everything I say and do everything I want them to do.
Well, and kind of the reverse, and this may sound confusing, but it's also important for parents to be able to say no to their children, to be able to have boundaries on their
Indeed.
Children, because the children really need boundaries.
Indeed.
So it's a very tricky time.
Right.
And it requires so much sort of self-possession from the parent.
Yes.
And that will also balance out the child's need for self-possession as well. This is when we, you know, need examples of
right.
good self-possession. And that's what a boundary really allows you to have, is a quality of, am I possessed of myself?
Yes.
Do I have a self to possess?
And did your parents have good boundaries? That's probably really one of the top 3 questions to ask about whether you were raised well or not. Did my parents have good boundaries? Did they feel the right to say no to me? To their spouse, to my mom or to my dad? But did they feel like it entitled to do that?
Well, able to do it, and that in their saying no, they stayed in connection.
To themselves.
To themselves and to others.
Yes, right.
Right?
Because if you don't have a boundary, you're not in connection with yourself and you're not in connection with others, for sure. It's all an illusion.
And that's the greatest misconception that people have about boundaries.
Right.
Every time I introduce boundaries to clients, they're like, but I don't want to feel separate from other. I don't want to push people away. I don't want to feel separated. Mm. And that's the greatest fear, is that I will, if I set a boundary, I will be separate from others.
That's the question. If I set a boundary, what happens?
Yeah.
If I tell my partner, if you continue to drink, I'm going to leave this relationship. If you continue to drive fast, if you continue to not greet me when I come home, or if you continue to like demand I come to every family function, if you continue, I am out. I'm not doing this anymore. Right. Yeah. So I think a good part of learning to say no is to see what the consequences are first before I say no. So if we're going to make changes, if you're going to make change from being a yes person all the time to sometimes I'm going to say no, you have to say, what are the consequences first? What am I going to say yes to if I'm going to say no first? So last week we did this 5 steps that things people could do in order to rediscover themselves. And one of them was, right, to what am I doing every day that is not me? And I can just stop doing it. It's as simple as that. What's the consequence if I just stop doing it? You know, another was to do nothing. Spend a day doing nothing and see who you are. Wow. You'll see that I'm doing a lot of things I don't really need to do. And I'm avoiding not doing. I'm avoiding being with myself and telling myself that all this is so important. So not doing that. And then there were 3 other. Observe yourself without judging yourself, right? Everything I am is terrific, just the way I am right now, today, if I just don't judge myself, right? And we won't say the other 2. They can get that when they listen to The Positive Mind on their favorite podcast channel. So saying no, Nasima, can be a favorite word. Was there a time in your life when you were saying no all the time?
For me, that's been a really tricky word. It's been a very hard word for me because, you know, I've talked about this before. I'm a 9 in the Enneagram, but I was kind of masquerading as a 2 for a while. And I think 9s and 2s probably have the hardest time with no. You know, no means conflict, which the 9 hates.
Right. Okay.
and no to an Enneagram 2 is like, well, I can't say no because I don't feel worthy of
That's
saying no.
Verboten. There's another good word.
Yeah, verboten. No is verboten.
More so than for the 2, right? So just to give people who aren't familiar with the Enneagram, it is a personality typing system. There are 9 types. Ennea means 9. And the 2 is called the giver, the helper. And they lived their life and built their life around giving. And often this had roots in their childhood because they looked around and said, the house is in chaos, so somebody has to do it and I'll be the one. And so they sort of give up their ability to say no in order to make the house function well. You know, do you know people like this? Are you like this? Did you grow up in this kind of home? And your siblings might have grown up in this home and they might have said a different thing. Well, their house is in chaos, but I'm not doing anything about it. I'm going to go achieve. I'm going to go make money. Or I'm going to have fun and do a lot of different things, like the 7, we would say. But Nasima was referring to the 9, which is the peacemaker. Well, there's chaos, but I'm going to keep the peace here. I'll be the voice of reason and keep peace. And so I won't say no either, but I won't say yes either. I'll just keep the peace. Mm-hmm. So we've done shows on that as well, and you can get that on the podcast as well. But yes, and so this person who does say yes all the time and refuses to say no, we say eventually is going to get even.
Right. Underneath all those yeses is quite a bit of resentment and like a dialogue going on in your head, like, why doesn't anybody help me doing this? Why am I always the one doing this? Blah, 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 blah. And it's insidious. And I tell you, it's very liberating to learn how to say no. And I started that journey of being able to say no maybe about 10 years ago.
Mm. Okay.
And it is really a journey of self-discovery and really knowing when too much is on your plate.
I think a lot of times we do it unconsciously. Like for me, I think I didn't deliberately say no, but I think after I started working, full time at 16, I started working a lot. And I just started narrowing my world between work and the things that I wanted to do. Pre-16, I could do whatever I want, whenever I want, all the time. But now suddenly I'm doing a job I don't want to be doing. I do need the money. And I just ended up starting to say no. And I went on like a 6, 7, 8 year tear of saying no without knowing. No through my behavior. Not always a verbal no to somebody, but no, you know. And I stopped hanging out with the friends that I had. I started doing the interests that I wanted. I, you know, stopped doing the chores that I did when I was pre-16. And actually, I could say no to my parents. Started saying that. Again, it wasn't necessarily conscious, but when I look back on it, that was my time to say no. And I'm wondering for our audience, did you have a time when you said no? And your life was just a no to other people and a yes to me. And if you haven't, maybe now's the time.
Well, I'm curious in hearing what you're saying about your story. It sounds like you were saying no to things that might have been more enjoyable and yes to work. And I just wonder if sometimes we do that and we end up becoming so identified with the thing we are saying yes to, which is doing work and making money or whatever and getting out of wherever you're at, as opposed to saying no to those things that might have, you know, given you a different kind of nourishment.
I agree.
You know, and I think sometimes we get stuck and forget that, you know, I said no to these things and yes to this for this reason, but maybe I was saying no to things that I needed to maybe say a little more yes to.
Good point. Thank you for saying that. I think that's really so important. And that's why I think last week's show is important for people, because I was saying yes to work that I didn't really want to be doing, and then I sort of got lost in that world of work and did lose touch with a certain part of me, certain sense of me. So coming upon this show that we did last week and this research and the work around that helps me, even at this age, you know, 30, 40 years later, to say, darn it, I thought I skipped this. I thought I got around this. I thought I didn't fall into this trap. And I, too, fell into this trap of having a false self and fight against it still.
Right. So like the you that you developed in saying no to all those things but yes to work is a self that may be more too identified with a work self.
Yes.
And a work ethic, and
which happens, by the way, to be also aligned with my father.
Right. Right. That's what I was
and my
say.
Brothers, you know, so you know, it was a hard paradigm to fight against. So again, this was unconscious as well. So men have a hard time around knowing what our yes is and what our no is. And it might be useful, it might be beneficial to stop and say, what am I doing every day that I'm not? And what do I want to say no to in my life now? If I really had a friend, if my partner was really my friend instead of my wife or partner or whatever, but my friend first, and I could say, you know, I really don't want to go to that party. Mm-hmm. I really don't want to go to that graduation. I really don't want to go to that wedding. I really don't want to. How would they be? How would the relationship, survive?
Right. And relationship is such a negotiation between being able to say yes and no. To feel into, now, I think you're pointing to a little more subtle yesing and knowing. It's like, I might ask, like, where is that no coming from? Is it coming from, like, a need for just more time for yourself and feeling a bit overwhelmed in your life that, you know, going for a social engagement just feels like too much? And that could be a really good sort of yes to yourself, no to the other.
Yes.
But then is the no a habit now?
Or is it lazy? Is it a lazy no? I don't want to go to the wedding because I'm lazy. or I want to go do my habit, my want to hang out with the boys, or whatever it is.
Well, that's another sort of social going. And in the matter of relationship, yes. I mean, I know, I imagine this summer there's a lot of weddings going on. Post-COVID, a lot of weddings, a lot of social engagements. And yeah, there might be a demand there, especially in couples, that everybody show up together and do things together. Yet you've just spent, 20 months in quarantine together. Right. And you might be like, you know what? I do want to go off, fishing with the guys while you go to so-and-so's wedding. Let's just do that and enjoy ourselves apart, and that can be okay.
If nothing else, saying no will at least open up the door to a conversation.
Yeah, and let it open a door to a conversation. Let it be an opportunity to negotiate and really get a sense of where the other's coming from. So often we feel so rejected when someone says no to us. There's an opportunity to connect on a different level. It's like, instead of taking it personally, I'm just going to throw this in because it's one of my favorite piece of advice. I'm not a parent, but what I've seen and what I sort of know about development, if you can not take no personally, you'll be okay. And so will your kid. Like, to not take it personally, that's just a person stating something about themselves or a child. And it doesn't have to be about a rejection of you.
Right. That's important. But in the moment, that can be really, really hard.
You just have to sort of stay.
So we know. Right? And that's one of the four agreements, right? There is this book, The Four Agreements, and one of them is to take nothing personally. We are talking about boundaries. Making and establishing a boundary. And thinking about yourself, how firmly do you feel that you're bounded in yourself? Am I bounded? There are boundaries that are porous.
Yes.
And that anybody can get in. And then there are boundaries that are firm. Strong boundaries. She has a strong boundary around that topic. Or he has a strong boundary in general, right? So we talk about porous versus firm and solid boundaries.
Right. And they can change moment to moment. Just want to say, like, how your boundaries are right now are very much impacted by your childhood experiences, by your life experiences, traumas. I mean, it's something that comes up a lot in trauma therapy around the status of your boundary and your agility with your boundary.
Yeah. So the question you could ask is, was I allowed to say no when I was young? That might be a hint at whether you have a firm or a porous boundary and whether or not, hey, wait a second, I'm entitled to have a flexible boundary. Sometimes I'm porous, and let's say, porous boundaries can be a gift as well. It can be a good thing sometimes, receiving people and having people influence you and it makes them feel closer and warmer towards you sometimes if you have that, but also have a firm boundary at times. People respect that. People would respect a flexible boundary possibly more than just a porous boundary or a solid boundary.
Sometimes porous boundaries or firm boundaries can feel, they can be anxiety provoking. And again, like, I like to sometimes explain to people that a boundary also helps you be seen. So if you have a more porous boundary, maybe you're not being seen as clearly, but there can be a little more contact. And I prefer, instead of a porous boundary, one that's a boundary that has a level of consent, where it's like I'm saying, I'm inviting you to come in to my space. I'm inviting you into my space, into me. I may be opening the door, opening the boundary a little bit, sharing a little bit more about myself, being a little more vulnerable because I trust, I've built a certain trust with this person.
Interesting.
And so, but when I learned about boundaries, it's like another layer of skin for you. It's a little more space. It's a buffer between you and the world. And if that, like skin, our actual skin, like if there's a cut or a hole in it, the skin heals. And you can actually do work with a therapist or someone or just yourself and just sort of sensing, where are there holes in my boundaries that are pretty consistent? And maybe I often get the same sort of, trauma or hit from a person because of that space that's there.
When somebody looks at you, what do they see in terms of your boundaries? Do they see a person that's approachable, maybe with porous boundaries and like, okay, warm and inviting? Or do they see somebody with a solid boundary? What's your aura? That's a question I've always wanted to ask.
Well, it's also like, what do they feel about you? Like, do they feel you being present and standing your ground and being in yourself? Do they feel that? Do you feel that?
Nasima, that makes me think that that can take some practice. It takes some practice to say no and to hold your ground. So if you're exposed at an early age, younger years, where your boundaries are violated, that you learn gradually to, and then you get it in adulthood. So many of us haven't learned it when we were young. We weren't challenged that way. We're challenged that way more in our adult world, in our careers, etc.
Yeah. I have a story that I like to share with my clients where, and just anybody who'll listen, I had a very distinct experience with this when I was in India. I spent some time, I was in an ashram, and every morning we'd have to go very early to the meditation. And so I was walking on this dark road by myself, and it's usually very quiet. But this morning, I hear a bike come up behind me. And these two young men are riding on the bike, and I think, okay, there's nothing that's going to happen. Whatever, they're just going to ride by. They didn't. They stopped. They hit me on my butt. And I was so angry. But it was done, and they scurried off. Mm. So the next morning, I'm walking down the same road. I hear the same sound. I think to myself, they're not going to do it again, really? And then, boom, of course they did it again. They hit me on the butt. So I was really angry. The third morning, I woke up. I stopped at the end of the street. I picked up a big rock. And I said to myself, when I hear that bike, I'm going to turn around and I'm going to look at him. And I did. And they just like ran off. Okay. And they, so it was such a lesson around, great. It's about me standing my ground saying, no, I am not going to let you do this. And I'm going to look at you. And it just, it shifted my idea. It's my responsibility to take care of my boundaries. Right. To stand my ground, to know what's okay and what's not okay.
And my question is, do you have a rock in your pocketbook nowadays? Are you still on guard when you hear a bicycle coming up behind you?
No.
That would make sense. Have a sort of everyday appearance now that nobody's going to ever be able to do this.
A little more. And I just really try to sense that I'm here and as present as possible, because one of my teachers said something so beautiful. Your presence is your protection.
And your lack of presence
is
your lack of protection.
Yeah. You're in hypervigilant, fearful states usually. If you're not able to be present to the situation. And very often I've heard clients, you know, talk about being very afraid on the subway, and it's like, well, they were lost in some catastrophic story, and they weren't just sitting on the subway,
right?
And
so
just being there.
A form of dissociating.
Well, yeah.
I can relate to that. I mean, there are times when my mind drifts totally away in moments, and it's a kind of dissociative state, and
yeah.
Things could happen if I'm not really vigilant or aware. Who knew that Indian boys had paper routes, though? What are Indian boys doing
it's
up
not
at,
a paper route.
At 6 in the morning?
They're riding around looking for vulnerable Western women
Westerners.
To harass.
I see.
Because
maybe, I don't know, there's money in that.
I don't think so. Just
all right,
some
so
jollies.
It's time for us to take our break. You're listening to The Positive Mind. I'm Kevin O'Donohue, licensed mental health counselor.
And I'm Nasima Dayan-Deemer, trauma specialist and licensed massage therapist.
And we'll be right back. And we are back. I'm Kevin O'Donoghue of The Positive Mind, licensed mental health counselor.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer, trauma specialist.
And we're talking about boundaries, and we're following up last week's Independence Day show. You know, we the goal is more freedom, right? I, as a therapist, I think that that's my role. I want to increase a client's sense of freedom. Even in a marriage, in a relationship, I say to them both, we're here to increase your freedom. Somewhere along the line, your freedom got narrowed, reduced, less, and our goal is to get more of it back. And some ways, let's look at the word no. What am I saying yes to that I don't want to? You know, how free am I to say no when I don't want to do something? I mean, let's start as friends. Friends don't make friends do things they don't want to do, unless it's good for them. but it's a way of looking at things. And this half hour, we're going to talk about if you don't have boundaries, how you might get them or practice them. And we're going to talk about men and women, right? And how men and women, you know, each of them has it differently. Let's talk first, though, Nasima, about where we are now coming out of this pandemic. Everybody got to say no for 16, 18 months. No, I don't have to get in the car.
Whether they wanted to say no or not.
Right.
You know, it's been a challenge maybe for some and a real blessing for others that they were finally able to say no. And maybe they're saying, you know, now they're saying no to jobs that they had before and yes to something different.
It's a new job. So a very common word now in psychology for the thing people are feeling is languish. People languishing about going back to work and they're feeling a sloth, a kind of sluggishness on returning to the way things were pre-pandemic. So psychologists and therapists are helping people work through this sense of languishing and sort of being lost and feeling like not sure what to do next. And
it makes me wonder if what you were doing before was somehow serving as a structure to sort of support a sense of who you thought you were. And with it gone, maybe it did really encourage a certain looking or understanding of yourself that maybe this was something I was doing that wasn't me.
Absolutely. And so, like, what do we say? This couple, and I'm sure this has gone on with many, many people, that one was an accountant, the other was a librarian, and they decided they wanted to open a landscaping company. They wanted to be outdoors. And here it is, you know? I don't want to spend my years doing things I don't want to be doing. A lot of the things the pandemic did was like, gosh, I do get to say no. I don't have to do this career. I don't have to do X, Y, Z. It's, you know, I think it's blessings from the pandemic is a play a friend of mine has written. And there are some blessings here that it was difficult the whole journey through the pandemic, but there are blessings here. And so one of them is I got my no back. I got to say no. And now maybe I can open my eyes and say yes. And then maybe let's talk a little bit about yes in this half hour as well.
Well, something about getting your no back now, it might be challenged a bit. There is, now everybody's coming out. So those maybe your friends who are mostly extroverted are easily coming out, and maybe you're more of an introvert, and it's harder. You know, it was easier for you to say no, but now you're coming out, and you do want to connect with friends. But maybe you don't want to stay out as late as they're saying they want to stay out. And can you say no in that situation? Again, it's like your no may be steady in some situations and not in others. And it's important to maybe look and ask yourself, like, when is it easy for me to say no? And when is it hard for me to say no? And what's the difference between these situations? Why is it harder? Maybe it's easy to say no to my friend and hard to say no to my mom. You know, like, what's there in the dynamic that I'm concerned about?
I think, let's say it, there's a psychological reset for everybody on the planet because of COVID-19. And I think there's a psychological reset. Every individual has to reset how they operate. And they could seize the moment to do that and use this experience to reset. Or they can, you know, be who they were pre-pandemic. And,
right.
And which might be fine as well. I'm just saying it's a chance at self-definition. One of the things, I got to have people stay 6 feet away from me. I mean, for people that have porous boundaries, who haven't had boundaries, it must have been a terrific experience to have people be 6 feet away and not have to ask them, can you give me space?
Right.
You know, or to have an elevator to yourself. Right? I mean, so this 6 feet apart experience is now maybe part of the psychology. It's now easy to say to somebody, could you please give me a foot here or 2 feet? It's easy now. It's like not asking people not to smoke now. You're allowed to say, excuse me, could you please put out your, not smoke. Now it's even progressing. No, could you give me my space, please? Thank you. So, you know, a lot of reset going on here.
It also may have been incredibly challenging and still be challenging, all of that distance. Again, that sort of comes to the thing of like, if I'm defining myself based on my contact with others, then that all of that time alone might have felt like a deep, dark hole.
Yes.
You know, because it's like, I don't know who I am. So maybe you went down that hole. Maybe you started to climb out of it knowing who you were a little bit more,
right,
if you got some good support, or just people to talk to. But there is definitely an opportunity there. It's like, so yeah, if I was defining myself by my work, if I was defining myself by my social life, that here I am all left by myself, or maybe with my partner, suddenly here I am. Who's saying no? You know, who can say no?
Right.
You know, all these things, that quality of the porous boundary, it's a difficult one to live with.
And if you're a highly sensitive person in high psychology, HSPs, highly sensitive person, it's very hard for you to maintain your boundary. You're just so sensitive, people can whisk right into your world and whisk right out of your world. And it's such a gift to have a high sensitivity. Sensitivity is a form of intelligence, awareness. To be highly sensitive is another way of saying I'm a highly aware person. And if you're accepting of it and not being vigilant, unfortunately, vigilance often goes with being highly sensitive, because we're there more in touch with the dangers around being alive as a human being. And but these boundaries that they have are much more porous and so more dangerous.
Yeah. And this is very much what I'm talking about. Like somehow the outside world is determining how I feel in myself. And so it's very important for the highly sensitive person to develop a sense of boundary.
So go there, Nasima. I'm interrupting you because you're the pro at this, at creating and helping people establish boundaries. As a trauma specialist, you know that trauma is an invasion, an overwhelm of the system.
Yes.
That you're getting too much and your system can't handle it. So as a trauma specialist, how do you help people return to a sense of having a boundary?
Well, there are two ways. One is to have them to just see if they can sense the space around them, because I work from the body perspective. So the body itself has its own sense of boundary, and it's usually like an arm's length away from you all around. A 360 degree is what your body is sort of projecting and sensing into the world with. Like your nervous system can feel 3 to 6 feet away from it, you can sense things in the environment. And so if you can just even feel the air around you, can you sense? And it's a kind of a weird ask. It's a weird cue, because it's like you've never really thought to feel like, what does the space around me feel like? So you can experiment with this by just putting your hands out too, with your palms facing out. And let yourself, you know, like we often will stretch into that space. You can just stretch your arms out around you and just imagine like a 360 degree perfect formed for you bubble I often call it the safety bubble for clients. It's like, and you can say, like, this is my space. Like, we often don't recognize that we're allowed to take up space, and no takes up space.
Will people practice this on their own?
Yeah.
Obviously, they do it with you in a session.
Yeah.
And you mentioned also a rope that people...
That's in the second.
Okay, right. So people can practice, who am I when I put my arms out, put my arms up, put my arms in front of me? Who am I?
Yeah. And is it okay for that I to take up space?
Okay.
That's what the no is. It's a space making. It's like saying, hold on, wait a minute, enough, stop.
Right.
No. Let me just get a sense of myself. Because if you don't have that arm's length space for yourself, then the world is far too close, far too invasive. If the world is coming into me at such a high rate and with so much information and I don't get to say stop, I have no way of knowing who I am because I'm too busy managing the world.
Okay, so... Every once a week on a Saturday?
Oh, or, no. Like as much as you can every morning as you wake up and stretch.
Okay.
Take some space for yourself.
Right.
You have a right to the space. It's there anyway. And just let yourself feel into it. This is me. This is my space.
So many people love their car ride to work. You know that this is the only time I get to be myself and have my boundary, let's say, or really the onslaught of the world isn't here. I'm enclosed in this metal box and I'm all me.
You can only hope. I think road rage is people getting too involved with what other people are doing on the road. So another way that I help clients, because that can sometimes be hard to feel. So I have a bunch of colored ropes in my office, and who knows, you may or may not have a rope yourself, but if you just place something around you, like a 3-foot distance around you, it could be anything, could be a scarf, a towel, just to feel and let your nervous system, let your eyes, let your body see that rope or that space. It's like, oh, and very often how people will hold a boundary, like if they don't have boundaries, they'll hold tension in their muscles. The minute we put the rope down, they're like, oh my God, those muscles just kind of let go.
Are like, they doing this standing up?
Or? They can stand up or sit, you know, whatever feels right. But it's like, whoa. Oh, I don't have to hold that sort of physical armoring. Wilhelm Reich talked about like armoring in the body. Like that physical armoring could sort of drop a little because it's like, oh, there's a boundary there. There's a little bit of space between me and the world.
So let's say that we all are afraid of each other. That what you're saying here is a moment for a person to experience in a therapy session what it's like to be okay in the face or in the presence of another human being and not being aware of this armor that they're carrying. But when you put this rope, which is symbolic, a rope around them, they can let down the armor.
Right.
And maybe sometimes for the first time. You've had dramatic results with this.
Dramatic results. It's such a great understanding. And another understanding that comes when I place a rope around me as the therapist. Sometimes the room feels so much safer to clients. Sometimes I feel farther away to them. Mm. Sometimes they feel smaller. It's so interesting the kind of perceptions that start to sort of come up, these kind of implicit perceptions, unconscious perceptions of what it means to be in contact with another person that is also has a boundary. It's like all of a sudden, like and the air clears between you. It's like, oh, there's you and here's me.
Right.
And we have our own worlds. And this, I think, is really supported by the Safe Conversations work we do, too. It's like we all have our own worlds. And if we take some space and hold space for our own world, we can then come into a nice meeting and contact with an other and an other's world.
I like this exercise. So it's without a boundary, you can't be intimate. If you have no boundaries, there's no chance to be intimate. So let's spend a little more time with the men and women, the relationship world, because you're basically saying I'm roped off. You're roping me off. And that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. We have to get roped off before we can loosen the rope and engage with others. So therapy, your therapy is helping people to first feel what it's like to be roped off and bound, you know, and feel my own boundary for the first time some way. You know, this armor that I'm carrying first, this is a necessary first step before I'm ready for intimacy. And I have to do say that, yes, I think on some level, we're all afraid of everybody. The safest I am is when I'm alone in a room by myself, right? And when somebody comes in, then it becomes a little dangerous, you know? What do you want from me? You know, so some either subconsciously, unconsciously, that arises. And when a friend is walking in, that doesn't have to. And when your love partner is a friend, then you've got like an undoing of this vigilance and this armor.
Well, yes, and there can be such an interesting thing that happens when there's an exercise that I'll often do, which is a walk-up boundary, where I will take on like a shape. I use these colored squares, so I have people say, "Okay, well, this is my friend. She's a purple." Okay, so I'll hold this purple square and I'll walk up towards the client, and can you say no to your friend? That sometimes brings up a lot of things. So it's like, oh, like what's the dilemma that happens in me when I say stop to a friend approaching? It's like, oh, that's someone I just want to hug. I just want to bring in. But what happens if I really honor just being seen by my friend in that way? Like, wait a minute, I can't do this. I can't go out. You know, will they stay in contact with me? It doesn't mean rejecting them, but accepting me.
Right.
Yeah.
So we don't have much time. Let's do what we said. We talk about men and women relationships, because as you were talking about the rope, I was thinking, well, the gripe against men is that they have a wall up. My husband has a wall up, right? Don't break my walls, is what he's often saying. Let me have my wall.
Right. My man cave.
My man cave. And so we're saying that a boundary is different than a wall. A wall is a definite communication. A boundary is a sine qua non, really, for a relationship.
Yeah.
So is your partner, and I'm just kidding about it being a man, women have walls up as well, right?
In different ways.
In different ways. So let's talk a little bit about that. I often think and look at a couple as conspiring. You're both conspiring. You don't know it, you know, and it's not your fault. It's our society and it's everything we've been handed down and a result of not being in touch with my real self, which happens to all of us. So I look at them, there's a conspiracy going on. What are these two people conspiring to do and not do? Because there's a both. There's a not do. One is, let's not get too close. Right? So how comfortable is this couple with being close? How comfortable is this man? And this is where the wall idea of men, our heritage, cowboys and Indians, right? I mean, it's primitive, but these paradigms or these archetypes that men were often grown up with, not to mention, you know, the patriarchal and our fathers, the World War II generation, for many of us, their fathers, that was a archetype, these men, the society that was built on this. And so walls might go up because of those things. And we want to like challenge that. So is it a wall? And is it a boundary? Or is it a boundary? If it's a boundary, it's because it's arrived at. A wall is something you just have. And I think it's the product of, substitute wants, Nassima, like alcohol or television or cigarettes or just, you know, so many different things that end up becoming walls.
Yeah, work.
And work, you know, become addictions. Anything that is like on the low level of a satisfaction experience versus a boundary, which is really a principle. You have to work at developing a boundary if you don't have them. And if you do have them, then it's an achievement. I've achieved a boundary. So a boundary is like, I will do something for a higher purpose. I will go to a wedding with my wife when I don't want to, because it's the right thing to do. versus I will not go to the wedding with my wife because I want to stay home and watch the football game. You know, I mean, it's
well, it's the right thing to do for the connection in our relationship.
Exactly. There's the higher purpose, right? And so then it becomes not automatic. It becomes a conscious awareness that I'm doing this for the, you know, for the development of our relationship. And it's good for the wife to know that I'm doing this for that reason. Sometimes you'll do it and just because you don't need to have that conversation all the time. But I think that conversation needs to be revisited.
Well, yeah. And that comes back to that ability to stay in contact when someone says no or they don't want to. Stay in contact and see what's there, what's behind the no. So yeah, the husband might say, no, I don't want to go to this wedding. And the wife would be like, oh,
you have to go.
You have to go. Or, you know, or she might retreat and feel hurt. And, you know, this whole drama can ensue instead of just sort of saying, so I'm really curious about that. No, what's going on with you? What, you know, what's behind that? Stay in contact. And that's saying yes to the relationship. And so it may end up that, you know, you talk through the no. And so now the woman understands and she's like, oh, I get it. That makes sense. And I'll go on my own. Or the other way around.
Yeah. And so following up on last week's show, right, which you can get on your podcast channel, where we talk about the self, the real self, and the false self. I think, you know, when you scale it, you tell your partner, you know what, on a scale of 1 to 10, I don't want to go. It's at a 7. Then you negotiate. Then you sit down and talk about it. If it's a 5, okay, you know, you don't have to talk about it. So what do you think about that idea, about scaling? Scale, because if you don't really know, right, if you're just for the first time trying to establish my right to say no, and I've been saying yes for so many years, you know, it's going to take some practice. It's not going to happen automatically. Okay, now I get to say no all the time. No. I'm saying that really if you have a partner who's a friend, you can say, you know what? I'm at a 7 on that. And we need to talk about this. So you need to know what I'm giving up for me to go do this thing. And I need to find a good reason to convince myself that it's a good thing to do.
So I would suggest if this feels like something you want to do and want to have in your relationship, this kind of flexibility, that you maybe have your partner listen to the show, sit down and have just a conversation about it.
Our show that we're doing now,
that you have a conversation about, okay, let's just put it out on the table. What are some things I'm saying yes to that I don't want to? And what are things I'd like to say no to? And just let it be a non-dramatic conversation so that you can both work on it. Because I'm sure that the women are saying yes to things they don't want
correct.
To. Right. And let's find a way to make it not personal.
Right.
And that each of us can start to develop and find who we are and what we really want.
A woman will accept staying in a relationship just because she doesn't want to be seen as someone who's not in a relationship. I mean, is this a real concern? So I think when you say no, or you put a line in the sand, or you, you know, establish a boundary. And like, if you continue to, you know, come home every night after drinking, or, you know, with hanging out with your friends and not put any time into this relationship, I'm going to leave. I'm not going to stay in this kind of relationship. I think a woman sometimes will go along with a lot of stuff, put up with a lot of stuff because she doesn't want to be abandoned.
Right. Right.
Well, she doesn't want to be alone, and not only on a personal level, but also how it looks socially.
Well, again, and if a woman is feeling like I'm secure only because I have a relationship, because I have a man in my life, because there's somebody else, that I'm basing my security and my sense of safety in the world on this person.
Right.
That them leaving or disappearing or whatever is like the worst, because like all of a sudden now I'm left with nothing. Like if I was using that person to create a boundary in my world, and often women will do this, like they'll just be with just the man or just their family and they won't explore. Like there's like kind of this false boundary sense.
Okay, so we are coming up, I think, with a lot more questions than answers here. I do think that that's not a bad thing. we're talking a lot today about our favorite word. Let's return to that. What's your favorite word? We hope that you find value in the word no.
No.
And we should, since we're the Positive Mind, do a show on yes. What are you saying no to that you want to say yes to? And what are you saying yes to that you want to say no to? And so we should do a show on saying yes. Following up our freedom show from last week, you know, again, I'll say one of the tools we tried to suggest is, what am I doing every day that I am not? And so now what can I say no to that I've been wanting to? You've been listening to The Positive Mind. I am Kevin O'Donoghue, licensed mental health counselor.
And I'm Nasima Diane Deemer, trauma specialist and licensed massage therapist. And we would like to thank our stations, our affiliates that have been airing us, WBDY, WRWK, KAOS, KFOI, KPEJ, KXCR, KYGT, The Detour, and Global Community Radio.
And four others last week. We got three others, which WOOL, yeah. and that's the one that I remember, but yes. Because Wool,
yes.
That's a great station,
so,
and three others. So
you can also find us on most podcast platforms, The Positive Mind. Also, we'd like to thank our producer, Connie Shannon, our chief engineer, Jeff Brady. You can contact us at tffpp.org with questions, comments, or suggestions for the show. Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye, folks.
Thank you for tuning in to the All Souls Forum. Keep your radio dialed to 90.1 FM, KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio, for your Jazz Afternoon with KC, coming up immediately. Followed by The Boogie Bridge with Jason Vivoni, and then the Heartland Labor Forum at 6 p.m. In the meantime, have a great day.